From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Silicon Valley, where tech workers were among the first to raise a concern with employers about the new COVID vaccines. They were concerned about making the vaccine mandatory at work. But their concerns were maybe not what you would expect. Here's the report from Bloomberg. Quote, "Here's a question we're sure to see in the courts before long. What if your employer mandates a COVID-19 vaccination and you'd rather not take it? President-elect Joe Biden might insist that he has no plans to compel the shots, but one imagines that lots of employers will come to the opposite conclusion, not only for the safety of their workforce and their customers, but also because, well, their employees might demand it. For instance, nearly two-thirds of tech workers surveyed say they won't go back to the office in person unless their companies require all employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19, end quote. Two-thirds. So those tech workers aren't saying, you can't make me get it. They're saying, you've got to make me get it, and you got to make our colleagues get it. They're saying to their bosses, make it mandatory. Don't listen to the dissenters. This is too important. But what are the employers' rights here? What are the employees' rights? Do you want to see companies mandate vaccines if they can? What legal stickiness are they about to run into if they try? And are there different categories of companies or businesses or organizations depending on where somebody works and what they're doing? Our guests will help us navigate the legal landscape here, and I will welcome them now. Carly Bolaños is a labor and employment attorney at Bolaños Law. Carly, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Welcome to Jack Tuckner, co-founding attorney of the New York-based employee rights law firm of Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock, and Sipser. Jack, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Evan. Thanks for inviting me.
And Elizabeth Cordello is chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Polano & Farrow. Beth, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
I'm going to start with Beth Cordello on this. How much buzz or confusion or concern are you hearing, either in your practice or in the community among employers, about vaccine, making it mandatory and what's going on with vaccinations?
There's quite a bit of discussion now, Evan, on all sides, especially now as in the coming months as the vaccine becomes more largely available to the public. Businesses are grappling with whether to make it mandatory or not, and workers are grappling with, they're feeling strongly on one side or the other oftentimes. As you mentioned, in Silicon Valley, we have employees who are insisting on a mandatory vaccine. And then in other places, as much as a third of the workers would not get the vaccine if given the opportunity. And then that's compounded by the fact that a significant number of people feel like they should be exempted from the mask requirement for one reason or another. So, how do you operate your business in this climate? That's the big question right now.
Jack, what kind of buzz are you hearing about this?
Well, I don't really hear the same buzz, I think, that Elizabeth and Carly probably do, because they represent employers and I represent employees as a general rule. So my focus is typically on employees who want to feel safe. And there are employees who are asking for, who want to be able to navigate and figure out what they're entitled to in terms of their rights to stay safe and keep their families safe. But in terms of vaccines, it just seems to me, and this may be counterintuitive because I'm the civil rights guy, like I'm the one who, will zealously advocate for an employee's rights, even past what the law typically allows. But right here, I'm in favor of mandatory vaccinations in the workplace. I know it's fraught. I understand on both sides. There's a number of issues. There will be, continue to be. But I think that it's pretty clear as a public health issue. So in the EEOC has recently indicated that it is permissible to mandate. And this is no liberal organization. Permissible. It's not a medical inquiry in and of itself. So, just to start this conversation off, I think we're heading in that direction that there should be. Elizabeth mentioned people are still resisting mask wearing, and I have, clients, potential clients that call and say, what do I do in the workplace? My colleagues are still not wearing masks and not social distancing. It is a problem. But, I'll just say this to sort of at the at the onset of this, the where I agree with, you know, we're all in New York State. The New York State Bar Association recently issued a statement that said that the authority of the state to respond to a public health crisis is well established in constitutional law. You have to balance the protection of the public's health and civil liberties, and the public health law recognizes that a person's health can and does affect others. And, you know, it goes on to talk about the magnitude of the pandemic and how it's unprecedented, the number of lives lost, the folks, us survivors who remain seriously ill, the risks faced by healthcare workers, the disproportionate impact of communities of color, and the profound trauma and disruption to our economy we've all experienced. And the United States was unprepared to deal with this pandemic. And this is the resolution of the conservative, generally conservative New York State Bar Association that is saying that the state should consider enforcing a mandatory COVID-19 vaccination, even if people object for religious, philosophical, or personal reasons. So that's, you know, to me, the buzz should be, given where we are, is that we make exceptions, like for religious reasons and for actual disabilities. But I don't really think there should be a hand-wringing debate that we have in perpetuity while we're approaching 500,000 deaths.
But Jack, before I turn to Carly for her thoughts on this, just kind of emphasize the point. When you are thinking about worker rights and someone may call you, I think it's interesting when we talk about both sides of worker rights here. The workers who say, I want it mandatory. I don't want to go to work amongst employees who aren't going to be trying to protect one another, versus those who say, this is my right. You cannot make me do that. You wouldn't represent somebody if they called you and said, Jack, I'm going to hire you here. We're going to go to war over this. They can't make me get this vaccine.
Well, first of all, they can make them get the vaccine. I mean, if somebody said, I just have, I personally object, and I understand there's a great percentage of the population, for reasons best known to them, they're saying, I wouldn't do it, I don't feel safe. But if you're just simply saying, I don't want it, what do I do if my employer is mandating it, not allowing me to go back into the workplace? Well, unless you have a legitimate bona fide, like, religious basis, or your own disability that your physician is saying it would be dangerous for you to have it, you really don't have much of a leg to stand on. That's the problem with that position.
Carly Bolaños, do you agree with Jack on this one, that employers should have the room to mandate?
It makes good common sense to me, but I don't quite agree with what he's saying. I don't disagree with what he's saying, because especially people who are downstate, who have been living with the seriousness of this for a lot longer, employees do feel strongly that there should be vaccinations in the workplace. However, you know, I've been thinking about a couple of things. For example, a pregnant female employee who is concerned, wants a vaccination, but is concerned about the lack of research with respect to, you know, the fetus and the vaccination. And maybe she normally wouldn't be bringing to her employer's attention at this particular time that she's pregnant, because maybe she's waiting for a promotion and kind of waiting to see how that pans out before she tells her employer that she's pregnant. And now she might be put in a situation where she needs to notify her employer that she can't take the vaccination because she's pregnant. So these are some of the issues that we're seeing, as well as union issues. Employers have been in pretty difficult circumstances so far, in terms of employees on the one hand who want the vaccination and employees on the other hand who do not want the vaccination. And maybe in certain unionized situations, the employer wants to provide the vaccination, but the collective bargaining rights aren't in place for the employer to be able to do that quickly. Some employees, and OSHA has a tremendous amount of political pressure to publish some sort of temporary standard covering COVID-19, which would address this vaccination issue. For example, the bloodborne pathogen standard that came out years ago, largely in response to, you know, tuberculosis, HIV epidemic, and hepatitis B, that standard requires employees who are going to be in contact with bloodborne pathogens to receive certain types of vaccinations. So OSHA may be coming out with something like that, which would insist employers, but might create more political pressures in the workplace. The other thing I've been thinking about, Evan, would be, okay, so what if an employee, you have the right to have a vaccination program and possibly, as Jack mentioned, an obligation to begin your vaccination program. What if employees won't comply? Is the employer prepared to terminate a lot of its workforce? What would the backup plan be around that? So I've been thinking about some of those practical components of if a substantial group of employees does not want to be vaccinated, what will the employer do in response to that circumstance?
Well, and Carly, in a moment, I'll let Jack respond to your point about a worker who is pregnant and concerned about getting the vaccine and maybe pushing back a little bit there. But what if a worker says, look, I'm not getting the vaccine because this is a plot to alter our DNA, and I don't believe any of this stuff, and I'm not doing it. Is there ground for that employee to push back?
So I think Jack's right. Like, there's really no ground for that employee to push back in terms of legal standard. There's not a real health and safety issue there. There's not a discrimination issue there related to medical. There's not a gender issue there. I mean, could we get to a point that an employee expresses a sincerely held religious belief regarding something, regarding the alternate approach to providing measures to protect employees against COVID-19, would we have to make accommodations for that? There could be some types of religions where an employee might be able to formulate a belief that relates to the scientific evidence surrounding the COVID-19 vaccination.
I can't think of what that would be, but I'm kind of following the hypothetical point. Jack, let's take the case of a pregnant woman to Carly's point there. Does that change it?
Well, that's a perfect point. That employee has two legs to stand on. I mean, pregnancy discrimination is directly in my wheelhouse, and pregnancy, the New York State human rights law is more progressive than federal law, and the New York City Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, forget it, is the most pregnant employee protective law in the nation. So pregnant women should be entitled to the employer's bending over backwards to exempt if that employee is asking for a reasonable accommodation for teleworking, to be exempted from the vaccination temporarily. Again, we're talking about a 9-month gestational cycle that is not likely going to present an undue hardship on the employer. She's entitled to preferential treatment. That's reality, and as well she should be. So there are going to be exceptions that are legitimate based on science, not based on some deep net notion that the vaccination is going to alter my DNA and so forth. I mean, that just has to be winnowed out.
Okay. Elizabeth Cordello, let's have you weigh in on right now. If an employer calls you and says, just want to make sure that I've got the green light to tell my workforce you all have to be vaccinated before you're back in the building.
Yeah, so, you know, there's headaches whichever route you take, Evan, whether you decide to do a voluntary, I'm going to encourage my employees program, or whether you're going to mandate it. You know, on the mandatory front, you know, Carly's right in that, you know, you have to be prepared for the fallout when your, you know, rock star workers happen to be anti-vaccine. Your key employees, your critical workers, especially if you're, you know, just always understaffed and struggling to recruit people, you have to be prepared to consistently enforce that program across the board. And even if you do institute a mandatory program, you do have to look at the request for accommodation for disability and the request for accommodation, you know, based on religion. And, you know, you have to be able to deal with the fallout from that and enforce that in a consistent regard. If you have a voluntary program, that's another set, because now you have employees who are getting the vaccine or very pro-vaccine and are angry that others aren't getting it. And then the EEOC, while it has come out and said that mandatory programs are permissible, they've also put forth proposed regulations. It's right now in a 60-day comment period. They won't be final until the Biden team takes over. So, you know, a lot of changes could happen between now and then. But they said if you have a voluntary program and you want to incentivize your staff to get the vaccine, the incentives have to be de minimis. And they used examples like water bottles or T-shirts as, you know, an appropriate incentive. And, you know, you see in the news lately, Dollar General is giving, you know, something like 4 hours of paid time, Trader Joe's, you know, and right now the getting's good for giving those meaningful, significant incentives for people to get vaccines. But, you know, if these proposed regulations go final as currently written, you know, employers will have their hands tied in terms of offering meaningful incentives. If somebody's on the fence about getting a vaccine, a water bottle, you know, it just isn't going to do it for them. They won't get it. And so,
but on that point, on that point, let me just make sure that we understand here. You know, you brought up Trader Joe's. Instacart has said it would pay $25 to more than its 500,000 gig workers if they choose to take time off to get vaccinated. Aldi is offering 4 hours of pay as a bonus for employees who are going to take time to get off and get vaccinated, a kind of incentive. Beth, is there anything wrong, illegal, or problematic with companies that incentivize, monetarily or otherwise, getting vaccinated? In other words, companies can do that?
Currently, yes, but that may change. Like I said, there's proposed regulations that they just came out. They're under a 60-day comment period, set to go final in March. The Biden transition team has not commented whether they'll squash it or not. So it remains to be seen. But as of March, if those rules go into effect as written, then employers will be really limited in terms of what incentives they can offer. And maybe that's why, you know, some of these companies are getting out ahead of it while they can, because those rules would not be retroactive.
All right, we have some really interesting questions from listeners, and I'll start asking now because I've got a feeling we're going to eat up a lot of the hour with just really, I think, thoughtful questions from listeners about what employers can and can't do with mandatory vaccination, what rights workers have or don't have, and where the law might sort of have to be settled going forward as we see. And I know some listeners are thinking, Evan, we can't even find vaccines if we want them now. Why are you? I promise you that's going to change. We are not that far away here. We will see more supply. We're probably going to see AstraZeneca. We're going to see eventually Norovax and Johnson & Johnson likely to come online in the coming months here. We will see a supply of vaccine that will cover people who want it, hopefully sooner than later. It's not that far away, and I know it's frustrating right now, but that will happen. And so we're talking about, with employment attorneys, about what happens in these moments when companies are telling employees what they've got to do. So, first question is from a listener who's asked not to be named and asked the following. Is it illegal to track or ask to track who has received the vaccine? Also, if a workplace offers time off for employees who want to get the vaccine and those employees have to prove they've taken the time for that reason, is that one way to know who has received it and who has not legally? Let me start with Carly on this one.
So that's a great question from the listener. Very interesting. The EEOC guidance that we've mentioned so far, it's some guidelines that were issued in mid-December. And as part of that, while normally any type of medical exam or inquiry, including something like tracking vaccinations, there's a lot of regulation related to that. It's the Americans with Disabilities Act and the New York State Human Rights Law, which provide for those regulations. But in the EEOC guidance, the EEOC stated, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, that it's not illegal for an employer to ask employees to require proof of vaccination. That's not considered an illegal medical type inquiry. So I do believe that tracking would be part of any requirement that employees be vaccinated. Some employers are choosing to conduct the vaccinations. Other employers will be sending employees for vaccinations and then requesting proof of vaccination. So that would not be illegal according to the EEOC guidance. In the union setting, it's a much more complicated than that. All of those types of benefits, time off that we would provide to allow somebody to go get a vaccination, any type of pay or incentive like Elizabeth was discussing for a vaccination, all of that is a mandatory subject of bargaining, would likely draw a positive unfair labor practice charge if an employer tried to just unilaterally implement that type of program. That would include any type of tracking program that the employer would put in place to monitor its mandatory vaccination program.
All right. Jack, what do you think?
No, I think it's definitely permissible. You know, just to clarify, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission enforces, you know, as it were, or you know, after fashion, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is really the federal law in question here, which covers employers with 15 or more employees. And it definitely permits that. I mean, I don't know, you know, the term tracking sounds a bit sort of like they're surveilling you, but simply, as Carly said, you know, asking the question and asking whether you've been, you know, inoculated or not is legal. And, you know, in terms of unions, I agree with, it's all contractual. It's just that so few of us in the private sector remain in a union membership. I think those numbers are down to 6%. It's true that that's a whole another smoke. One has to deal with the collective contract to see what, you know, your rights are laid out there. So that's just different from everybody else who's a so-called really at-will employee who doesn't have that little layer of protection.
Jack, I'm before I get Elizabeth on this one too, I'm envisioning an employee who thinks, you know, you can't make me prove that I've gone to get the vaccine. You know, you can't make me wear a badge. You know, I've already heard people saying, you know, what are we supposed to wear, badges or wear some sort of mark to show who's been vaccinated or not? What's the response to that?
Well, I don't think you need to get it branded on your forehead, but asking for, you know, proof of, we're not, it's not even permissible according to the same EEOC guidelines to check antibodies, right? Because that is a medical inquiry, right? Because it might show that you had it and now you're no longer infectious, et cetera. That's impermissible. But simply showing something from First Med or a physician's office or a hospital that you had the vaccine is really not particularly intrusive. And again, in the vast scheme of things, unless, you know, I understand there are those who get very upset about the notion of, look, the state is making me do this. But that's really what we've all been dealing with for almost a year now, with you know, the whole idea that, what about if we, should we have mask mandates? You know, I'm in the camp of yes. And there are those who will say no, and, you know, that's a huge fight for them, you know, and they feel very strongly about it as a matter of personal liberty. I think you have to balance that against the general welfare and public health. So I think you can be asked to show a proof of a vaccination.
Elizabeth, how would you counsel an employer who says, hey, is it illegal or legal to track or ask who has received the vaccine in-house?
I would agree with Carly and Jack. You can certainly ask if somebody's been vaccinated. If an employee answers no, I would caution employers to be very careful about follow-up questions, because that may elicit ADA protected information. And so, you know, follow-up questions regarding not getting a vaccine should be handled with care.
Okay, just to be clear then, if an employer asks for proof of COVID-19 vaccination, should they warn employees not to provide medical information as part of the proof?
That's correct, Evan. I would say, you know, let your provider know, or whoever administered the vaccine, to not provide any information other than whether you were vaccinated or not.
Okay, so there's a lot of sort of tricky steps then for employers who may be acting in good faith. Would you agree with that, Beth? I mean, sometimes it gets very adversarial, but it sounds to me like the question came from a listener who is trying to act in good faith without sort of overstepping or going out of bounds on the rules. Would you agree, Beth, that a lot of employers are not sort of actively trying to run afoul of things here?
Oh, no. What they have in mind is the safety of their workforce, the safety of the public they serve, if that's the kind of industry they're in, and dealing with this public health crisis.
So let me question from Andrew here. Andrew writes the following. Evan, we keep hearing awful stories about nurses not getting the vaccine. What gives? They are supposed to be frontline workers. And if they are not getting the vaccine, then what about workers at places like Wegmans or CVS or wherever we have to go almost every day? So my question has two parts. Can hospitals enforce requirements on nurses? And if not, why aren't they? And if so, why aren't they? I think that's what he means. Shouldn't that be a separate category of worker? I would not want my elderly mother being cared for by someone who's not vaccinated. Also, can essential workplaces receive their own special standards? I can't believe Wegmans would allow someone who has not been vaccinated to work there. That's Andrew. I'll start with Beth on this. Beth Cordello from Polano and Farrow. What do you make? Let's hit part one here hospital requirements. Can hospitals require nurses and other staff to get vaccinated?
So no governmental body has said, you know, hospitals have to mandate it. And in healthcare, mandatory vaccination programs have been around for a while with the flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. And it's always been permissible. The big question here is whether COVID will be treated differently. I will say that, yes, even among healthcare workers, there's been a different reaction to the notion of getting the COVID vaccine versus getting the flu vaccine. And dealing with that among staff, you know, the approach has been largely, even in healthcare, is to educate their staff so they don't have these notions that their DNA is being changed or that they're going to, you know, die next week as a result of getting this vaccine. But, yeah, there has been skepticism even among healthcare workers and you know, healthcare providers have been grappling with that. There has not been a big movement as of yet that I've seen in healthcare to mandate the vaccine, even in the nursing homes. They've been strongly encouraging staff, and I guess we'll see in the coming months whether they will hold to, you know, a voluntary program or whether they'll make it mandatory.
Does that surprise you, Jack?
What surprises me is that all of that are just in general foot dragging, because I think it should be. It should be a no-brainer. You know, it should be context-related. I mean, it's, you know, the more likely that an unvaccinated employee would put a customer or a patient or a client or other employees or the general public at risk, it seems to me the more compelling, you know, the case should be for a mandatory vaccination, especially one that, you know, is I understand, is 95% plus effective. This is like the influenza vaccines where sometimes they say it's, you know, 17% effective. So for the caller's question, yes, I think that in that context, whether it's an employee at a Wegmans, nurses should be at the front of the line, and most want to be. Part of the problem is now it's been this delayed. Right now we're still in this, you know, who's getting it, very slow. I mean, I know folks that are still over 75 and waiting. Where do you go? You know, it's difficult. So until this, you know, to answer the question, somebody should be triaging this. But I think as the questioner is saying, you know, you don't want to go somewhere where you think somebody's not even, you know, the cashier at Wegmans not even covering her nose with her mask, and there's no, wouldn't Wegmans want to put on the front door, our staff has been vaccinated? I mean, that, you know, it just seems to me like we're all in the same boat. This isn't really adversarial, the usual, you know, management employee, except for those who, individuals who have concern. It seems that it's, we really all are in the same situation.
But, Jack, some of what you are exhorting us to think about is sort of our collective responsibility, which I don't disagree with. It's a matter of what the law is going to say in court if it gets down to it. And if someone is listening to you saying, too bad, I work at Wegmans, or I'm a nurse, and I'm not doing it, and I will win in court, what do you tell them if they think they're going to win in court on this?
Well, I mean, I don't. First of all, they can be, the employer can bar them from the workplace. And, you know, again, if they want to take this up right now, even OSHA has said back in 2009 that this is permissible in terms of mandatory back in, you know, in H1N1 and the flu. So, and in fact, you could file a complaint with OSHA if you're an employee and you feel you have an unsafe work environment. So, you know, I don't know if somebody says, I want to litigate this in court forever, saying my right, I want to litigate my right to never have a vaccine. And if my employer fires me, I'm going to say that was discriminatory. I don't know that person has a claim. Okay, so you're always free in a litigious society to try that out. But, you know, I would normally say to someone, are you in a position to do that? I would try to do everything I could as that employee to seek a workaround, right? Is there something about you and your situation, religiously, your own disability, something that might make your employer, and most, and employers have to have dialogues, an interactive process. They have to talk with the employee. They can't just, you know, fire the employee. You know, there should be this back and forth. But just somebody who says, you know what, you'll never get me to take a vaccine, you'll never get me to wear a mask, I don't really think that's a legally protected position.
Okay. Carly Bolaños, what do you think?
I totally agree. I don't think that's a legally protected position unless they have some type of disability, unless they have some type of religious accommodation that they need, unless there's like a strong health and safety issue related to the employer's vaccination program or the administration of that program, where the person could then become a whistleblower under OSHA standards. But we really haven't seen that type of defect in any type of planning for employer-sponsored vaccination programs. But those would be the only areas, if an employer misstepped in the development or administration of their program, that I could see an employee having any type of legitimate claim there.
Okay.
And Evan, may I just say that in New York City, if you worked in the five boroughs of New York City, pregnancy in and of itself is a protected status. So pregnancy, while not being a disability, is entitled to a reasonable accommodation. And even in New York State, most pregnancy-related, known limitations of pregnancy are considered accommodatable under the Pregnancy Discrimination Act and New York State Human Rights Law. So there's a category that, yes, it does get special treatment, either from an exemption from a vaccine, if the OBGYN is saying it's not safe yet to take that, or you should work at home until your baby's born. That there's no question. So there are issues like that. With other comorbidities, many people have those. So if there's a reason why that you should either not be in the workplace if there hasn't been a certain level of that critical mass of herd immunity, or you can't get a vaccine, or you won't get a vaccine, but you do have to have some legitimate rationale, again, typically in the religious or the disability realm or pregnancy.
Okay. I've got a lot more questions coming in from listeners. Kathy writes, says, at Strong, there are always employees who will not get the flu vaccine. We get a sticker for our ID badge yearly if we get it. Those who did not must wear PPE when in contact with patients, including a mask. So just a little bit of perspective on a hospital setting where employees don't have to but are encouraged to get it. And so we'll take more of your phone calls and emails on the other side of this break as we talk about what the law says regarding mandating vaccines. And I think some listeners, based on some of the feedback, are a little surprised to hear that the guests on the program today indicating that, yeah, if employers want to tell you that you've got to get vaccinated, unless they're your extenuating circumstances, pregnancy, or maybe a few others that might be sort of legally protected, that yes, they can tell you that you've got to do that. Our guests include Jack Tuckner, co-founding attorney of the New York-based employee rights law firm of Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock, and Sipser. I thought I would have put both Sipsers together. Carly Bolaños, labor and employment attorney at Bolaños Low. Elizabeth Cordello, chair of the labor and employment practice group at Polano and Faro. We are grateful for their expertise, and we'll take more of your comments after this break. I'm Evan Dawson. On Wednesday, in place of Connections, there is a presidential inauguration taking place. It'll be a little different this year than many years past, but NPR will have coverage of all of the proceedings, live coverage from Washington, D.C., as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris take office. That's coming up Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Debbie in Fairport has read that the reason the vaccine can't be mandated is because it's EUA, emergency use authorized. Can they discuss that? Now, just a little bit of a, I want to make the distinction here. Sometimes I think there's something lost in translation. We have heard from people who have been going to get vaccines and even had some doctors say, are you sure you want this? This is not, this is emergency only. It's not authorized, for regular use. And people are hearing that going, whoa, not approved for regular use. People are hearing that going, whoa. That is a way of really sort of distorting what's going on here. Yes, it's under EUA, emergency use authorization, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, but these are not unvetted vaccines. These are not, you're not part of some sort of unvetted trial. And it's important, I think, that everybody, even people administering the vaccines, are communicating that effectively. So listeners, as you go to get vaccinated, we would like to hear about your experiences there. I think that would be helpful for us to hear what you're hearing. And always feel free to email the program, connections@wxxi.org. But on the legal side of things, Debbie is hearing that because it's EUA, employers cannot mandate it yet. Elizabeth Cordello, what do you think?
No, that's not true. I think she's not making the proper connection there. The emergency use authorization gets rid of the red tape that a vaccine would typically go through to be released to the public. Because we are in the midst of a public health crisis, it was, you know, that red tape was removed and allowed for public distribution. That's all that is. Employers, the government has been very clear that, you know, businesses may mandate it in their workforce.
Okay. Agree, Carly Bolaños?
I think that there's just some confusion about that, but there's really no distinction in terms of the employment laws that we're talking about, including even any type of workers' compensation legal issue. There's not a distinction between the emergency use authorization.
Okay, Jack?
Yes, I think that was more about the treatment. Like, for example, the president got when he was ill, or Chris Christie. You know, there was an emergency use for, it wasn't the vaccine, but it was a...
Regeneron is one of the examples, yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I hope that clears that up, Debbie. Thank you for that. A number of other folks are just asking, in general then, can we at least put it in plain language? You can get fired for not getting vaccinated, yes or no? Simple as that. Jack?
A real simplification of it, but because there's many sort of caveats.
Oh, I understand the caveats.
I think the short answer to that, if your employer says you need to get, we have mandatory vaccines, we're not singling you out, it's for everyone, and you know you have to have it or you can't come back into the workplace and deal with colleagues and customers, and you don't have one of the legally accepted, you know, cognizable bases. Yes, the answer is yes.
Carly?
I'm a little bit worried about one aspect, the National Labor Relations Act, which even in a non-unionized setting, Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act gives employees the right to engage in concerted activities for the purpose of mutual aid and protection. So I could see a danger for some employers if more than one employee is getting together and they're expressing concerns about the employer's vaccination program or the mandatory nature of the program, and then the employee or employees are subsequently terminated from employment. I would have some concerns about that particular aspect. But otherwise, I think that an employee could be terminated with the exceptions that Jack mentioned that we've been talking about throughout the program, disability-related, pregnancy, religion. But practically, how will the employer be able to continue its operations if a large group of employees refuses the vaccination?
Okay. Beth Cordello?
So, I mean, in that circumstance, yeah, you know, Jack said it perfectly right, unless you're in some protected classification. Yes, and as Carly notes, and it's important, you know, as an employer, all of these situations are so fact-dependent, and you have to make sure that, you know, it's you know, that you do have a mandatory program that's written out, it's consistently enforced, and you're not, you know, because if the employee, for example, is complaining on social media about the safety of the vaccine, that could be protected speech under the National Labor Relations Act. And even OSHA, although they are strongly encouraging their own inspectors to get the vaccine, they have said if somebody sincerely believes that getting the vaccine could, you know, seriously harm or kill them, again, that would put you probably under an ADA protected class. Then, you know, also you're complaining about that could be a whistleblower claim under OSHA as well. So there's a lot of caveats to that, but, you know, setting all of those aside, yes.
Okay.
You know, it does get, Brian, may I just add one thing to just jump on what Elizabeth said?
Yep.
If someone has, just mentioned, you know, an ADA claim, and I say this when I'm representing pregnant women who have had anxiety related to just going back to work where, you know, they are otherwise healthy and they want to be able to finish their pregnancy from home and they're deeply anxious. And that, to me, is another basis for an accommodation, pregnancy-related anxiety around COVID. It's a pregnancy-related medical condition. So if somebody is actually in treatment, for example, for, you know, anxiety and depression around these issues, and I know many of us are these days, it may provide a bit of some, you know, a hook, if you will, for that employee to have a conversation with the employer about whether or not he or she is entitled to some flexibility. But it's actually something that has to be sort of legitimized. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to just add on to what Jack said. You know, that's a great question. Does, you know, sensitivity to a vaccine constitute a disability? And by sensitivity, that could mean, I get a rash or a headache the next day, or it could mean I'm anxious about getting the vaccine. And I think, you know, Jack's right. You know, hopefully if you're going to make that fight with your employer or try to get that accommodation, you're actually treating, you're not just generally kind of worried. You're right. Treating with somebody for a diagnosed condition of anxiety or something like that. But it gets super gray in that, you know, mm-hmm. area, particularly with anxiety. Is it just, you know, you're not really thrilled about getting it, or do you have an actual disability that would be covered by that law?
Okay. Let me keep working through listener feedback. Roger, and I'm glad Roger sends this because I really want to clear something up here. Roger says, "Hi, Mr. Dawson. First of all, Roger, that's my dad, but thank you." Roger says, "While I'm in favor of COVID-19 vaccination, to my knowledge, none of the vaccine trials have evaluated the effect on transmissivity of the virus. That is, if being vaccinated keeps you from being able to affect others. It will be a benefit for employers to prevent their employees from getting sick, but it won't necessarily offer protection to other employees or the public." That's from Roger, and that is wrong. And Roger, I'm glad you sent that. The reason that a lot of people are thinking like Roger is because I think people like me and a lot of people, maybe even some in public health, but a lot of journalists too, what we are doing is we are overstating the fact that we need a little bit more data. But what we can tell you is this. Epidemiologists tell you they fully expect the vaccine to stop you from spreading it too. And I'm going to read from Dr. Monica Gandhi, who is an epidemiologist in San Francisco, who's pointing out that we're actually getting data on this. Here's what she tweeted this weekend. Quote, "Oxford AstraZeneca trial did swab every week, and asymptomatic infection reduced substantially. So we can now say with relative confidence that what is expected to happen will happen. The person who got the vaccine is safe from disease and from spreading it to others. No time in history do we have this extraordinary detection of asymptomatic infection, since the latter can transmit to others. So please, please be assured that you are safe after vaccine from what matters, disease and spreading it. Two vaccinated people can be as close as two spoons in a drawer." That's from Dr. Monica Gandhi. She goes on to basically say she understands why people like journalists are saying, hey, we don't know, you might still spread it. But she's saying, no. It would be an extraordinarily unusual circumstance if the data shows that we're all protected from COVID, but we can still spread it. That's almost certainly not going to happen. And now with AstraZeneca data coming online, it's not happening. So, Roger, yes, employers are concerned about you. They're also concerned about you spreading it. And the vaccine means almost certainly you're protecting yourself and you are protecting others from spreading it. I appreciate that email. Now let me get Eric's email. Eric says, what about political discrimination? And he points to the following, and I'll go ahead and read this for our guests. This is a new NPR PBS poll and from Marist as well. I didn't see this. Who will get vaccinated? 79% of Biden voters, 75% of Democrats, 71% of white college-educated people, 60% of white people generally, 60% of men, 58% of all Americans, 55% of women, 55% people who are not white, 54% independents, 53% white non-college, 45% white evangelical Christians, 43% Republicans, 39% Trump voters will get vaccinated. Eric says, doesn't this show that mandatory vaccination could be political discrimination? Let me start with Carly.
I don't think so. I don't think that there's a legitimate basis for that type of complaint when we have such scientific data to suggest the benefits. For example, what you just shared in terms of keeping yourself safe, keeping your coworkers safe, I just don't think that there'll be a legitimate argument that somebody has a protected political belief to avoid vaccination. And it's certainly not included in the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's guidance with respect to the types of areas that we need to be careful about. It is one of those concerns that I have in terms of, yes, this might not be an illegal situation, but practically, what type of problem could a mandatory program have in your workplace? There are a lot of people who believe that vaccination is not safe, but there's also a lot of people that believe that not wearing a mask is a political statement, not taking a vaccination is a political statement. And how do you contend with those types of employee beliefs, especially if these are employees that you need to continue to work in your operation? I think education programs can tend to help with those situations. So a robust voluntary vaccination program that's coupled with intense education for individuals to help them understand scientifically why the vaccination is important for themselves, their families, and their coworkers is probably the best way to approach that type of political divide that could be created in your workforce.
Okay. Jack, any concerns about political discrimination?
Yeah, well, Carly stated that particularly elegantly. All I could say is it's not from a public health perspective. There's nothing political about it. We're not favoring Democrats or singling out Republicans. There's nothing. There's zero anything involved in that other than these are right. These are self-described numbers. Just like 74% of Republicans don't believe that Biden won the election. But that doesn't mean when we're talking about again public health issues and mandatory vaccination. This is the problem we're in right now in the divisions of our culture. But I think, as Carly said, we just need to constantly try to unify and educate, because the fact is that the truth and the science of this knows no political bounds between Republicans and Democrats. We really, really are all in this together. You know, the virus doesn't care whether, what camp you're in.
Okay. Elizabeth Cordello, anything to add on that?
Just to say that, a uniform program across the board, no matter what color you are, how you voted, et cetera, if you want to work here, you need to get a vaccine. I don't think some sort of disparate impact theory. Well, yes, it was a uniform program that was consistently implemented, but it disparately impacted Republicans. But, that's not going to fly. That won't state a claim.
All right, Beth, Ingrid in Penfield asks, can you address what the standard of proof is for someone who wants to say they have an exemption for religious reasons or disability? What do they need to prove? Beth, can you hit that one?
Sure. I'll start with the religious one, because I've already handled a few of those in recent weeks, and I think a lot of people are confused about what constitutes a religious belief. Even years ago, I represented a pediatric practice that put in a policy, because I'm sure you'll all recall, years ago, it was really widely believed that routine childhood immunizations were directly linked to autism. So there was a big anti-vaccination movement against childhood vaccines. And one pediatric practice here locally said, you know what, we don't want unvaccinated kids coming through our doors. It's too much of a threat to the other kids that are in this practice who are too young to get those immunizations. And parents, brought a claim in the Division of Human Rights against the pediatric practice saying, it's based on our religious belief. And the Division of Human Rights said, the threat to the public health trumps that. And they allowed it to go forward, and pediatric practices can have that. In terms of what constitutes a religious belief, jurisdictions vary widely. There's a district court in Ohio that some said, that there's somebody who was a vegan that didn't want to get the flu vaccine because it has egg product in it. And they said, that person's veganism is very much akin to religion, and we say that's protected. Mm-hmm. And then there's a district court in Pennsylvania where somebody said, I'm a Christian, and I believe, and I don't like vaccines because I think, God's going to heal me, and this wasn't like a Christian Scientist or something like that. This was just a Christian. And the court said, that doesn't constitute a religious belief. Just because you are a member of a religion and you don't like vaccines, that doesn't cut it. And then also, as we saw with the pediatric practice, the public health, the threat to the public health is very real and will very often, trump these things. In terms of a disability, it's a lot easier to prove you have a covered disability as opposed to winning on a religious ground. And the undue hardship and the obligation to try to accommodate, those thresholds are much higher, and those will be more difficult to overcome.
All right, last minute or so, Carly Bolaños, I'll kick this to you. A very wise attorney, I think, named Elizabeth Cordello told me years ago that there are going to be moments where things might be adversarial, but if you can, try to communicate very effectively, whether you're the employee or the employer, and try to work hard to seek common ground before you get to litigation. Would you, Carly, advise employers that you can, for the most part, mandate vaccination, but don't do it? Or is this a case where it's up to the employers to decide what's best there?
Well, first of all, you got excellent advice from Elizabeth Cordello years ago. Communication is key. Education for employees is key. To answer your question specifically, Evan, at this point in time, I am advising employers against the mandatory programs. I think that those are programs we should move to only if there's a need. I think that we should have mandates only when there really is a substantial risk of harm to the health and safety of an individual based on a particular job. So not necessarily requiring it across the board, but maybe looking at specific job functions where we do have to have a mandate, but otherwise trying to have employees voluntarily be vaccinated. But I don't think that works without a robust education program, communication program.
Well, really interesting stuff from all of our guests this hour, and I know there will be more questions in our community in the months to come as vaccination becomes more widely available. Carly Bolaños, labor and employment attorney at Bolaños Law. Thank you, Carly.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Jack Tuckner, co-founding attorney of the New York-based employee rights law firm of Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock, and Sipser. Thank you, Jack.
You're welcome. Thank you, Evan.
Elizabeth Cordello, chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Polano and Ferro. Elizabeth, welcome. And thank you. Get out of here. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you.
What day is it anyway? Hey, from Rob, Megan, I'm Evan. We will talk with you Thursday.